Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Monday, August 12th, 2024. How's everybody doing out there? Streamers are still kicking in there on the video end. I don't know what it's doing on this CPFM end. Let's see. It says it's running. So we're going to assume it's running and we're going to say a prayer. That's what we could do here. Anyway. Okay, good. We are on the air on Safety FM. As it was pointed out recently by Jay Allen on the great Safety FM Rated R's safety show on Safety FM. That's our morning news program here on Safety FM. This is primarily an audio deal, right? Now, I wanted to... We recently changed our hosting site here for the podcast, and no, I tell you, don't put too a lot of faith into the podcast analytics programs, because it's really, I get stuff in there, feedback and everything else from so I Google myself, or I have other people Google with me, and what do you think happens? No, I find out, hey, you're being heard in this country, you're on this platform and everything. It's like 40 different platforms that they put you out on. And, but anyway, I wanted to give a shout out to my European listeners. According to the new software there, we got stuff going on in Belgium, we got stuff going on in Germany, we got stuff going on in Poland, we got stuff going on in Hong Kong, and Southeast, that's not Europe, but that's South, no, in Asia, no, all around the Pacific Rim. It's great. No, sort of like that movie Moneyball, where the Brad Pitt character gets told by the end, by the statistics guy, yes, baseball reference, no, you hit a home run and you didn't even realize it. Thank you for the listeners out there. I do this because of you and spreading the message of safety and self-empowerment and how do we manage this stuff and everything else. That's great. Where have I been? I had a really woofno internet connection out at where I was. So we had a full schedule last week where I spent the week at Cooperstown All-Star Village, outside Oneonta, New York. You can Google it. It's a great place. My son had his last 12U baseball tournament on the small fields out there. Team did great. Very proud of my son. Very proud of the team and all the coaches and everything else that were involved and the other parents. Now, usually there is no controversy with this stuff, but the actress Alyssa Milano had released on her Instagram and other social media a fundraising thing, right, for her son. And she didn't mention what tournament it was because she didn't, there's security issues and other stuff related to what, she does. I get into some of that myself here, and I know some of the other podcast hosts here. If you host a podcast, there's a security issue. You do anything online, there's a security issue. You got to watch out. You get a lot of crazies out there. And She didn't say where she was going to be, but it turns out that she was at Cooperstown All-Star Village, I believe the week of July 19th or thereabouts, middle of July, with her son. Anyway, she tried to do fundraising for this whole thing. And people said, well, you're a millionaire. You shouldn't be doing, you should be doing this your own. And there's a lot of, okay, I get the point. She's a millionaire. Great. But how much do these things cost, do you think? It's like, well, what do you mean, Jim? How much do these things cost? You know, it's a baseball tournament. How could it, what's the big issue on here on how much it costs? It was for this tournament, it was.
A baseball tournament. How could it,
I thought I was off the air here. For this whole thing, just the entrance fee was something like north of $30,000. I don't have the exact number, but it's north, significantly north of $30,000 per team here. So there's a lot of money to be raised. And for someone to say to her, well, you should have just wrote out a $30,000 check and be done. Well, she's coming from the California, from the West Coast. Now you got travel, you got airfare, you got hotel stays. You got everything associated with that. There were a number of teams, and this is only out of New York. And I know I'm mispronouncing, but anyway, there. It's about 40 minutes away from the Cooperstown Hall of Fame for baseball, which we went to. I mean, this is a big expense. We got a whole bunch of people out there coming out of the West Coast. I mean, these teams come out there to play. So I can tell you this much, that she's probably paying a lot of money for that organization, to be a part of that organization. I'm not belaboring, I'm just saying it with that. There were reportedly teams from other countries, not during the week we were there, but other weeks there were teams from other countries coming out there for this 12U baseball tournament. And a lot of costs and everything else. So I could see her putting the word out to raise money for this whole thing out there. Was it worth it? Yeah, I tell you what, it was worth it. It was a phenomenal experience. If you're going to go somewhere on vacation, how much is that going to cost you? Nice vacation? Probably the once-in-a-lifetime vacation? The same thing. This is a once-in-a-lifetime event. Probably roughly about the same amount of money out there. So we fundraised. We did not, did not cost us out of pocket really other than time. We fundraised the hell out of this locally. We did not use our social media on this platform under Safety Wars for it. Well, there were some other things done by the team and, conflict of interest type stuff. We don't do that. But phenomenal thing. Now, we're going to talk about the Olympics. Now, this is a safety show, not an Olympics show or a sports show and blah, 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 blah. Guess what? It's a show about what I find interesting. Now, well, Jim, it's not all about you. Yeah, but guess what? We got to find this. If it's not interesting, it's kind of hard to talk about, especially today when you have a migraine headache. And I am here with the bright studio lights from here. Six lights on me here. Oh, five. One went out. Six lights on me here with the migraine headache. Not so easy here to deal with. A lot of stuff going on here. So here we have. And, I can't put this up here because they're all, they're not government websites, so I try to avoid putting them up here. So with this, so now you're on, but you get to see me. Anyway, Australian breakdancer's academic background exposed amid a controversial Olympic routine. Dr. Rachel Gunn, better known as Ray Gunn, she did breakdancing. She got a score of 0 here on her breakdancing routine. It's gone viral on here, but I tell you what, I got a lot of negative comments because I put on my Facebook page, which is public, end of it, the Jim Poesel, P-O-E-S-L, Don't smell it like the jersey makers did, which we had to have new jerseys printed out for the tournament. They had I said breakdancing. I had heard about it a little bit, and I turned it on. And I said, you know what? This is actually pretty good. Yeah, here with this. And I said, you know, I think it was a positive thing. Those are people who are competing. They're representing their countries. They qualified, whatever the qualifications were, to go there for the country, maybe an international group, what have you. Fine. They want to compete. There's a lot of people. There was a marathon runner from Brunei, came in last in the women's marathon. Okay, so what? She came in last. She came there. She said, I came there to complete the race, not to quit. Same thing here. I'm pretty positive. Now, what they're saying here, and they're ripping this woman apart, is that she is a academic, right? They question her credentials. Okay, I'm going to put it out there this way. My opinion, Jimmy's opinion here, nobody else's, not the networks or anything else, Jimmy's opinion, right? The if this was a man, I don't think that they would be saying this. My own opinion. This is sort of like the whole Dr. Biden controversy, where Jill Biden wanted to be referred not as the first lady, Mrs. Biden, but as Dr. Biden. If she earned it, let her Dr. Biden. Okay. You may not like it. I may not like about that. What she wants to be called, that's what he called. The way I was brought up, and where in a community where my mother had some friends and associates, where the women were PhDs and the men were PhDs. And I tell you what, if I said anything, called them Mr. or Mrs. or Miss or anything other than doctor, I got a stern talking to by my parents. They earned whatever credential they have. You're going to refer to them as doctor. And if you, and I don't care if you're everywhere, everyone's laughing at you when you go over to play at their house and you call them doctor. I don't care. You're representing us and it's going to be doctor. Period. End of discussion. And now they're saying she's going to use this stuff as, part of her, for academic reasons and studies. And okay, she wants to do it. That's fine. She wants to do that with it and use this information. Other people are going to use it. She put in whatever work she did and doing this and everything else. Other people are going to be talking about this. We're talking about it here. Guess what? Good for her. She went out there. She represented her country. She had, some political stuff. So for us to go and say, well, the Olympics is not political, and no, shame on her for bringing in political stuff. I have a list here I made here. Okay, here you go. Right, so I on my social media, I referred to an article from Board Panda, right? And this is what it is. Ray Gunn is not the, that's her name, Ray Gunn, Dr. Rachel Gunn, Ray Gunn, right? I think that's pretty funny, but anyway, pretty original, right? It's not the first person to use the Olympics as a platform. Have we forgotten the 1980s Miracle on Ice, right? U.S. team of amateurs fights the Soviet Union on ice. They win the thing. You don't think that had anything to do with politics? You don't think that we've been running on that high for how long? Going on 45 years? This up-and-coming winter? Come on. Of course they use it for politics. And then we had the boycott of the Moscow Olympics by the United States and other people in the West. I forget all the countries, but we boycotted because the invasion of Afghanistan was the reason we were told. And then the Soviet Union boycotted the 1984 LA Olympics because We boycotted the 1980 Olympics. I mean, come on. How about the civil rights movement at the 1960 Mexico City Olympics? By the way, I used to know one of the people there who was there protesting, named G. Larry James. He was the athletic director at Stockton State College, now Stockton University, a.k.a. The Burn. It was also on The Cosby Show when they did a thing about the Penn Relays one year, which I did not see at the time, but I saw many years later, right? But let's face it. She did not make a scene. She was not antagonistic. Everybody had fun. If you look at the crowd, and everybody had fun, and, you know, let her do her thing. Everybody had fun. That's all I have to say. Why rain on other people's parade? I get a lot of more conservative people out there. Jim, you should. This is horrible. Breakdancing at the Olympics is not horrible. Come on. You know? It's good out there. Now, on to other Olympic news. We have Olympic legend Carl Lewis says no athlete should return to the Olympics after the embarrassing USA track and field performance. Okay. This is something I know a little bit about because I did track for 8 years. Look at all, track is a team sport, but it's not like other team sports. It's like a team sport with individual performances, especially with a relay. Now, a lot of these folks that are on the national team, they have to qualify. For this, how do they qualify? They go to what are called the Olympic trials, right? So the Olympic trials. And when they go on the Olympic trials when they do the Olympic trials, they compete and everything else. And for most track athletes their goal is from high school on not to make the Olympics so much. Yeah, a lot of people, they want to make an Olympics. So we realize that there's not a lot of, thousands of athletes going for three spots in your event. Very difficult. Most of the athletes want to go out there and they want to get to the Olympic trials or the national meets where they have a wider pool of things, right? And that seems to be a little bit more of this. So when these teams get chosen for their events, when their teams get chosen for their events, you're only dealing with people who might have known each other only for a short period of time. They don't have a lot of practice time to do the event. And the big thing here with the 4x100 meter relay race is done on a track, and you have to hand off the baton within a certain distance. All right? So you have to hand out in a certain distance. Now we're getting around to the safety portion of this, right? All right, so they had a problem here with this, right? It was called an illegal pass. Christian Coleman crashed into teammate Kenny Bednarek while making the exchange between the first and second leg. Coleman also handed the baton over the outside the exchange zone, therefore going against the rules. The rules state, as for World Athletics, who governs track and field, the baton shall be passed within the takeover zone. Passing the baton commences when it is first touched by the receiving athlete and is completed the moment, is in the hand of only the receiving athlete. All right. And anything outside of that is called a takeover. All right. This is according to this website. I did not talk to Carl Lewis myself, even though it's from Willingboro, New Jersey. I did not, right? And it's time to blow up the system. This continues to be completely unacceptable. It's clear that everyone at USA Track and Field is more concerned with relationships than winning. He added, no athlete should step on the track and run another relay until this program is changed from top to bottom. Doubling down on his disappointed MVC Olympics, Lewis Johnson reported that Lewis was furious. And this is according to a reporter. Carl is furious and he is angry about multiple things. First of all, he's angry about a system that is not set up to help the athletes from the United States move forward and do well, right? Okay, I can agree with that. Track is like one of the most, you only see it every couple of years here. He said if Noah Lyles was out sick with COVID, they should have just replaced the anchor leg, meaning the last leg, and nothing else. So the fact that they reordered the entire relay had him worried and in the end had him upset. People are now online campaigning for Lewis to coach Team USA. Please step in, and everything else. Okay, now, this is what I want to point out. They only have a small amount of time to practice from the end of the unless they've been on the same team and everything else, the runners, right, from the Olympic trials to this. Other countries, they have a lot more time to practice. They're doing this all the time. Their teams are chosen way in advance, a lot of these countries. Now let's talk about this. Were they in the lack of knowledge mode, SKR, in the rules mode, or in the skills mode for here? Again, they're concentrating specifically on their own individual events, and this is like an ancillary event. And it's always assumed the United States is going to win this event, or at least medal in this event. So it comes out to this, right? My suspicion is that they did not practice enough on this to get into that skills mode. But even so, I don't think you're going to get into that skills mode. I think it's only going to be rules. And let's remember, human error is normal. Let's not belabor these guys doing this and the mistakes or any other Olympic athlete out there. Not right. And of course, Monday morning quarterbacking is, right, or Monday morning coaching in this case, not useful, and blame and everything else, a lot of blame will go around, and I'm sure this is going to be analyzed for years on end by people more experienced in this event than I am. But again, I'm going to say this. We got 14 golds in the athletics, so we're going to talk about that next here on Safety Wars. We're going to move to our first commercial break.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Posel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Posel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Okay, we are, hold on. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we're going to get to OSHA news here in a, let's talk a little bit more about the Olympics here. Because these events, again, I'm biased toward the throwing events because we're normally not covered here, but we're going to cover them here on Safety Wars. Here we have, right? Arshad Nadim, who won the javelin throw. Jimmy, he's not American. He's from Pakistan. Okay, yeah, great. He's from Pakistan. But there's something to be learned here about this. This is not only an inspiring story, but it's a commentary on the way we act in the West, and maybe your organization acts here. This guy, all right, he was out there making his own javelins. He had no money here. He even had to go to social media for a new javelin here. Believe me, the javelins are not cheap. We're talking thousands of dollars for some of this stuff. And depending on how far you throw, you need a different weight on that. So God knows if he even got the right javelin half the time. But he was fortunate enough to have this. All right, came from a small village. Training over there in Pakistan. We know that it's not easy. He went over there. This is what he had, his father said. Initially, we improvised homemade javelins by using long eucalyptus branches with iron tips on the end. The fields in our village served as our training ground. We developed our own weight training apparatus using iron rods, canisters of oil, and concrete. Right? Ahead of the Olympics, the Nadim revealed, and this is from NBC News, that he had been training with the same old broken javelin for years and successfully appealed to the Pakistani government for help securing new equipment. Even his Indian rival got involved, speaking out to help Nadim, right? And he went in there, and guess what? He won. He won the javelin throw. Congratulations. Now, what do we have to learn here about our organizations here? Always the new thing, right? We're talking about this. This type of thing, human organizational reform, behavior-based safety, reporting, auditing, air sampling, this, that. We talk about all this crap, right, in here and everything. How about we get back down to basics? How about we not go to work to get people hurt? Doesn't that seem to make more sense than anything else? Because there are people in your organizations, I assure you of this, right? I assure you of this. There are people in our organizations out there, many organizations that I have, a lot of workers. Well, this is a high-risk job. We got to expect to get hurt, and that's okay. Hey, this is a high-risk job. People are going to get hurt. That's all there is to it. People are going to get hurt, and that's okay. Back in the day, they used to project how many people are going to get hurt and what the payout's going to be. That was all factored in there. Things have changed a little bit, but I can tell you that even though officially companies are not doing that anymore, there are still companies and organizations out there that are out there to hurt people that are okay with it. We cover this all the time on some of these stories. We had a story a month and a half ago where a guy got buried, partially buried in an excavation. His employer was throwing stuff at him, literally throwing stuff at him. I don't know how come he didn't get assault charges filed on him, for him not to call OSHA or call 911 or 911 if you're out there in the middle of the country. All right. There were out there. All right. And that's a little joke, guy. All right. Don't be emailing people. But, you know, we have people out there that are okay with that. You know, it's just the way it is. Other countries, they're okay with people getting hurt. Now, here we have some other stuff. Valerie Allman beat out the competition by a lot, by like 7 foot in the women's discus to win to defend her discus gold medal from the last Olympics. Again, I'm going to say this with her. If you want to learn to throw the discus, watch Valerie Allman throw. So if you are just starting out, watch the way she throws. There's probably nobody, male or female, that could do that what she does that perfectly. Out there at that level and that high profile. I'll add that. I'm sure there's people who could do that. All of the throwing websites, same from what I can see with this. All right. Hammer throw finals. All right. Again, Americans did very well. I knew the before this meet, the best appearance in a hammer throw, which is a relatively new event for women in the Olympics, was by her mentor. One of her mentors is a listener of this program, was Amber Campbell out of Myrtle Beach. All right, out of the Carolinas there. Here we have Annette Enkeya Ashewakonowok. Sorry I'm mispronouncing that. I tried. I practiced. Came in second. Got a silver medal in that best, right? Congratulations to her on that. All right. Now, let's go on to, let me do this.
You are listening to Safety Wars.
Tomorrow's Safety Today.
And since it's Monday, we're going to be re-recording a lot of this stuff. So, this is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
Right. Human error is normal. That's your secret message out there. Now, we talked about this last week here where we had an internet outage here in the area, in my neighborhood. And where is I just had this? Okay, here it is. The and this came out today, this afternoon. And it's important. We talked about internet outages. How do we get information? It's through radio. And what happens is, especially on the large thing, and we covered that, probably worth covering again on this. I did a deep dive into emergency management and with radio communications about a year ago. But cars are phasing out. Car manufacturers, AM radio. And some of these countries, I believe in Sweden is one of them, that they got rid of radio entirely and they're using satellite radio for everything and internet radio. Like on Radio Big, Live 365 on Radio Big, and on our other thing, which is part of the Safety FM Network's family of stations here. Great station. I listen to it all the time. But, you know, they're phasing out stuff. So here we have Audacity has announced a licensing deal with Good Karma Brands in which the company will move the programming of ESPN New York 98.7 to 880 WCBS effective on August 26th. We'll see 880 end its 57-year run with all news just 2 days shy of its anniversary and change the call letters to WHSQ. All of the content currently heard on 98.7 WEPN FM will move to 880 with the station retaining Audacity's production and New York Mets baseball. Okay, that was one of my questions. The deal takes effect as Good Karma's lease with Emmett's Communications for 98.7 comes to an end. So we're losing news station. You said, well, what's the big deal? And as one of our listeners pointed out on here, there were a lot of issues here with AM radio with these way these antennas are set up, where there were parts of New Jersey where they were being overdriven by Canadian stations, Montreal stations, which I'll attest to, it's true. So how I have a drinking problem. I don't make the mouth every once in a while. So how, so that's basically it with that. AM radio is being phased out. It's going to be with that. And I lament that day and I'm going to fight against it the best we could. There's some stuff in Congress that, people, bills and everything to retain AM radio, but it's an essential part of our emergency management system here for the country. Here we have Space Perspective unveils mothership vote for stratospheric balloon trips. This was so. This is basically where there is, and this is from last week. I'm going over some of this. Space Perspective has announced the completion of its new marine spaceport, where its stratospheric balloons will take the intrepid tourists to the edge of space. The vessel, Marine Spaceport Voyager, named in commemoration of Voyager 1 interstellar probe mission and not the Star Trek series, took 2 years to build. Now, I'm going to point out, yeah, they've been doing this at high altitude balloons for some times, but if you look into it with some TV shows like Star Trek, they actually did a episode on this Voyager it was Star Trek Voyager episode 61 Rise, where they did something similar to this with a space elevator. Again, this is years and years ago. That's why I watched this Star Trek and a lot of the other TV series out there that really covered a lot of these topics many years ago. No, Star Trek Voyager, 20-some years ago. Another show out there that's off the air, Sliders, eerie, all the scenarios that they had with that in that TV show. Maybe we'll do a program on it. COVID. Now, this came out last week, and this is from NPR. Is COVID endemic yet? Yep, says the CDC. Here's what that means. 4 years after SARS-CoV-2 sparked a devastating global epidemic, U.S. health officials now consider COVID-19 an endemic disease. At this point, COVID can be described as endemic throughout the world. This means essentially COVID is here to stay in predictable ways. So they're treating this more like a cold, sore throat, strep throat, all of the seasonal stuff. I hit the cough button that time. I made it. But all this other stuff is as a normal part of life. I can tell you that I know of one medical facility in central New Jersey that had 27 out of 35 people get COVID that were patients there. Pretty scary stuff. And that was 2 weeks ago. So, again, no deaths, thankfully. But they're saying that they anticipate COVID will be killing about 50,000 people every year, which is roughly about the same number as the common flu with this. If the flu can be common, right? Called common here. This is out of some other COVID-related stuff out of today. The CDC reports that wastewater levels of COVID are considered very high across the U.S. At least 26 states are either high or very high for COVID-19 infections. The data shows this summer's COVID-19 levels could pass the previous two summers. The CDC says sewage can be tested on traces of infectious diseases. And I'll add polio, too, because that's what we were talking about a couple of years ago with the polio outbreak here. And diseases could be found even in people, right? They're talking infectious diseases in general and all this stuff. So it was, that's not surprising there. That's probably an easier way. I think it seems to me that they're trying to build an analog out here where people are not, a lot of companies, a lot of my clients still have COVID protocols out there. And people, now that we have an incentive not to report COVID because nobody wants to be out of work, right? And so now there's or companies don't want to have people, reporting COVID or anything because then they'll have to implement a they'll have to implement different things and production goes down and everything else. Here. So again, so I think they're developing an analog, lost my train of thought there, not surprising, an analog where they're trying to figure out, hey, where are our areas for COVID there? So, trying to track it a little bit easier when people are not reporting things because everybody's got to do, right? natural bodily functions. Kind of hard to cover that up. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, more CDC, a lot of CDC news out there. Report published, CDC's released the biggest causes of mortality in 2023. The report published by the agency on August 8th was based on death records from National Vital Statistics System, meaning somebody, you know, has to report this, probably medical examiners. So here they are. Boom, boom, boom. Heart disease, right? Cancer. All right, and we're looking at, right, what is it? 500,000 deaths plus? All right, unintentional injury, stroke, chronic lower respiratory diseases, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, 100,000 a year, kidney disease, right? And then chronic liver disease, and then lastly, COVID-19, 50,000. What's not on here, and I think it's because they do it through models, is what we talked about here. Workers dying from workplace illnesses like cancer, which are long-term, 50,000 a year, according to OSHA. So something to think about, folks. All right, yep, something to think about with that. So if the 50,000 were holds, then it's about the same number of people of COVID die of workplace illnesses. Okay, CDC got smacked upside the head by the courts the other day. A federal judge ruled Friday that the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has likely been breaking federal law by deleting former employees' emails soon after they leave the agency. The ruling was issued by District Judge Rudolph Contras, this is the story from The Hill, on a lawsuit filed by Trump-aligned conservative group America's First Legal Foundation in April. Contreras found that the CDC was following a records retention policy that had not been approved by the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, and allowed former low-level employee emails to be deleted within about 3 months of them leaving the agency. They said in 36-page opinion, and they said it was unlawful with that. Now, a lot of these organizations, especially on the right-leaning organizations, are investigating, and according to, are investigating a lot of this stuff, and these emails are subject to discovery. So, for example, I've known some pretty weird OSHA cases out there. Some real, really weird stuff going on. All right. Where clients of mine have done, without my knowledge, Freedom of Information Act requests from OSHA on, why are they getting targeted? Why are they in the targeted industry? Why are they this? Why are they that? And sometimes they get some information that maybe they might not or not supposed to get on things dealing with organizations, not individuals. I believe it's a felony to release the individuals' names who make a whistleblower case. They can find out, but not through normal channels here, I think. With that, so I don't know. People want to know, and again, these low-level emails, how much do we find out on low-level emails? Look at the whole thing with WikiLeaks, where we had evidence of deception in the global warming or global climate change arena from researchers that said that they have to exaggerate things. Again, that did irreparable damage, in my opinion, to the whole debate here. This is a story came across LinkedIn. I don't know when this was. However, I shared it on our LinkedIn, Jim Poesel, P-O-E-S-L, right? Like my name. This is from here. I don't know the veracity here. I'm just going to use names here. I'm not going to include company names here. A safety officer arrested after contract laborer's death at a power plant. A 54-year-old, this is from Jarzuka, I believe that's in India. A 54-year-old safety officer at a power generation unit has been arrested and forwarded to court in connection with the death of a contract laborer at the plant. The incident occurred early Saturday morning when a worker fell into a blast furnace while on duty at the plant's unit. The arrest was made under blah, blah, blah. They reference the case. The safety professional was detained for his alleged negligence that might have contributed to the accident. The case highlights ongoing concern about safety protocols and labor conditions. The tragic death has raised questions about the safety measures in place. All right. So, I don't know what the laws are or anything like that in this country here with this. But we do get into this thing. Well, we're going to blame the safety professional for everything. Right? We've gotten into that. And I include, and this has been expanded recently because we're always learning new things. This is what I have written in every contract. And sometimes when I'm a direct hire, I have this written directly into the contract here. And this is more or less my get out of jail free card, an attempt to have a get out of jail free card. Because what happens is these companies have a tendency of blaming the safety professional for everything. Well, we have a safety guy. There's one company that's a Japanese company that we've all heard of that one of my friends got fired from. And they said, well, we're a safe company. We have a safety guy in charge of everything. What do we know? We're in production. We don't know nothing. And he had no authority to hire, fire, reward, or discipline employees or make changes to company policy, right? Did not have it in there. Had he had it in there, then he probably could have sued them for wrongful firing. And this is what I do. Do I have the authority to hire, fire, reward, or discipline employees, make changes to company policy, or anything like that? And I need to know what my exact responsibilities are. Because this is what happens. Especially in states like New York that actually prosecute people, safety professionals, and competent persons. I don't have the authority. I told this guy multiple times. I told this person multiple times to put on fall protection equipment. I told the company to do X, Y, and Z to get the right fall protection things. There was one job I was on in the recent past where I had designed an entire fall protection system for them. Off the shelf, got on the phone with the manufacturer. Hey, blah, 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 we're going to do this. Hey, this is blah, blah, blah. Well, know what I got back? Bleep you, Jim. We're not doing this. Okay. Put it in writing. But it's on record. I told you to do this because it's impossible for any safety professional, me or anybody else, to stand out there all day long and remind people to put on fall protection all the time, every 2 minutes. And you won't discipline them. I can't fire them. I can't discipline them. Most I can do is take a photo and send an email to them. I'm not going to be, but I tell you what, if someone would have fallen, guess what? Jimmy, it's your fault. Again, you got to document this stuff. I don't know how that goes here. There is a fire chief, recently retired in northern New Jersey, that always tells a story where he was in doing building inspections in New York City back in the day, 1980s, and he had noted a whole bunch of problems that he was a low-level guy. He noted all these problems, gave them to his supervisor. His supervisor did nothing with them as far as building codes. There was a building collapse with fatalities, and somebody went and stole all of his records out of his file cabinet. It looked like the file cabinet was empty, and he's said, man, I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to go to jail on this one. Monday morning comes around, one of his coworkers comes in, and this guy's like, dude, I'm going to get fired here. I'm going to get jailed. I said, don't even worry about it. This is what I did. Here's all the original records I photocopied because I saw what was going on here. I stayed late that night. I photocopied it. Remember, 80s, no cell phones. I photocopied all your notes and put the photocopies in the file cabinet. Here's all the originals of all your stuff. And he got out of likely criminal charges on this. So that is why you have to write everything down and document it. And the smartphones, right? One way of doing that. And again, now what were they doing with the CDC here? Go back. No, people, that's all part of the public record. You got to keep those emails on there. And a lot of conservative groups are out there researching them. Have we heard about this this whole thing where with the astronauts out at the ISS, where they go out there and they're going to be up there for months and months and months and months out there with, they can't get down because the Boeing spacecraft that they were in or whatever they were in did not, they're having issues with it. So they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. This I came across, this is an older story from 2019 from NPR when I was looking up something else. But if we recall, there was a bridge collapse in Tennessee in April or March of 2019. And this is a report here, this cites, from the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, that more than 47,000 bridges in the U.S. are in poor condition and in need of urgent repairs. Why do I mention this? The report said it will take more than 80 years to fix all the bridges. Now, friend of the program, he's been on this program, Murray Sabrin, said, who I used to volunteer for when he was running for political office, said several times, he was asked the question, how will we know when we are close to financial collapse in this country? When the gouverno hits the fan, where can we have problems? And he said, when the infrastructure, like roads and bridges, don't get fixed. Tidbit there. That was 2019. They had that with that. I can't imagine it's gotten better, even though we have every week we were having stories here about the American one of the acts that were funded by Congress in 2021, Build Back Better, I think it was called. With that, that's still 47,000 bridges. Now, my question is this. Go to your local municipality or city and do some research. This may be worth it to find out how the bridges are in your area. I believe the state retains that information. Unless they're the CDC, then they erase it. I'm joking here. Okay. Now, we can save these stories from OSHA for tomorrow. Except for a couple of them here. So, federal court blocks Southern California logistics company's retaliation against workers, interference with federal investigation. The U.S. Department of Labor has obtained a preliminary injunction court order forbidding a company from threatening or retaliating against its workers and further interfering with an ongoing federal investigation. When the investigators from the department's wage and hour division showed up at the company, a work site, the company removed workers and hid them for hours at a local oh, you gotta be kidding me. The company removed workers and hid them for hours at a local fast food restaurant until the investigators left. The company then instructed employees to work across the border before firing them and deleting proof of their employment from the computers. So this is pretty funny here, in a way, right? Oh, the people came for the investors? Okay, we're going to evacuate everybody, put them in a local fast food restaurant, and then we're going to send them across the border to Mexico from San Diego, and then we're going to fire them and delete them from the computers. Wow. The division is investigating whether the company paid workers at its California warehouses in pesos through a Mexico-based affiliate. This is a quote from Western Regional Solicitor Mark Pilleton in San Francisco. Despicably, the company, and I'm not mentioning the company, he does in his quote, obstructed a federal investigation by hiding workers for hours offsite at a fast food restaurant to prevent them from speaking with investigators. To obstruct further, the employer and its Mexico-based affiliate instructed these workers to work in Mexico before terminating them and deleting records in an effort to cover up its violations. The preliminary injunction stops the company from doing the following: retaliating against any employee believed to have spoken to a labor investigator, interfering, obstruction, or deterring any employee from cooperating with the investigation, contacting or threatening to contact family or friends to keep workers from speaking to investigators, and destroying evidence. And they were also told to restore all information from all electronic devices that were deleted. And federal law protects employees working in the U.S., even if an entity outside the country hired them. Domestic employers that jointly employ such workers, like this company, ignore the principle at their peril. The Pilleton added, the U.S. Department of Labor will hold employers accountable when they violate workers' rights and obstruct investigations, regardless of whether those workers return home across the border after the workday. And it goes on and on and on. Again, don't mess with these people. They have a problem. Here we have out of upstate New York. This is from another Department of Labor thing. After an Occupational Safety and Health Administration whistleblower investigation, U.S. Department of Labor's officer and the solicitor filed suit against an eye doctor and his practice March 2022, alleging they illegally fired an employee concerned about the practice's failure to implement state-mandated protocol. I thought they were optional, right? State-mandated protocols to protect employees from COVID-19. Again, I thought they were optional. Isn't that what we're told, the narrative now? Yeah, it's called the gaslighting narrative, right? We never told anybody to do blah, 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 blah. Well, how come there's legal action against it? Well, explain that one to me, right? The court agreed that defendants had retaliated against the employee based on protected activity. The court permanently forbade the company and the practice from future violations of OSHA anti-retaliation provisions and required them to prominently post a notice for employees stating that the employers will not discharge or in any manner discriminate against any employee for engaging in activities protected by the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. The court also ordered the company to pay a contempt fine of $1,250 for court discovery violations. In other words, right? And it goes on with that. So that's all I got for tonight. Wanted to thank everybody for the continued support of this program and the Safety FM network. We will be see you later this week, and we're going to go to our outro. You have an intro, we have an outro. So we will see you tomorrow, God willing, if not live, then by podcast. I plan on doing a podcast tomorrow. For Safety Wars and Safety FM, this is Jim Poelzel.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.